You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room with David Goss, that guy in the octagon. Nowhere to be found. No bear call. We didn't set the bear call up, but we do have Ben the research bear here for his, it's not a trial. You're part of the team. This is you got the start.
Trial?
You got the start.
I'm here. Okay. I'm out here.
Oh, yeah, you are out here. You're in the starting three, I guess.
So. You're a homegrown player. You're a USL star.
I'm definitely a homegrown player.
You're a USL star. probably, I'd say USL player of the year. And now you're taking your spot starts here and there.
Kevin Molino.
Yeah.
You think you're Kevin Molino?
Yeah.
I thought you would more be like Alex Mueller.
Aaron Long?
I'd say Aaron Long. A little more workmanlike in that sense. A little under the radar now, up into the starting lineup, doing your thing. Look, a big show here today. You watched that game on Friday night. The U.S. smashing Honduras to, bring people back down to earth, so to speak, because there was a lot of worry. There was a lot of worry about the World Cup. Now people are on the other end of the spectrum saying, we're going all the way, 6-0, Christian Pulisic,
we already won it, baby.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that in just a second.
2018 Golden Boot, Christian Pulisic.
For the record, guys is dancing right now while I'm trying to record this.
That's what happens in the green room. People dance. Okay. Big game against Panama coming up on Tuesday. We'll preview that one with David Sakata, at David Sakata on Twitter. He's a big-time journalist down there in Panama. He's going to give us the scoop on what's going down with Los Canaleros. Look for that after the break, as well as a full preview of that game. We'll talk about Honduras in just a second. But first, we need to talk about MLS, because there were 3 games this weekend. But the one thing we're missing, and I've increasingly thought this over the years, I mean, literally I've been thinking about this for years, we're missing the listeners' voices. You know how we solve that problem, guys? No, not gonna. Nobody's gonna answer. You're just gonna look at me.
Well, we do know, but
yeah, because we kind of know the answer.
Well, play along.
No, Andrew, tell us.
Thank you. Well, we set up what we're tentatively calling the Hot Take Hotline, which is a voicemail inbox that you can call and leave your takes after weekends, before weekends, whenever you're riled up. The phone number here, bust out those pens and pencils, folks. Stick it in notes on your iPhone. 401-206-0-MLS. That'd be 657. 401-206-0-MLS. Call that. Leave your takes. Don't make them too long, because then we won't, you know, be able to play them. Also,
I would say, you know,
keep the colorful language to an absolute minimum.
Keep your takes below 30 seconds.
Below 30 seconds?
Yeah, I think you should be able to get out your take in 30 seconds. Okay. If you can't, then you don't deserve to be on the show. You don't deserve to be on the show if you can't get your take out in 30 seconds.
Fine. Well, he majored in hot takes.
He did.
Yeah.
So master's, doctorate? What do you got?
He's been studying it.
Oh, I have a doctorate in takes. I was born into takes. # Mike and the Mad Dog.
He was birthed into Mike and the Mad Dog.
His dad, his grandfather, his grandpappy before that, they were all into takes. And now you're in that business as well. So hit us up. We want to hear from you. We'll start to flip you into the mailbag, into segments, doing whatever you want to do in that sense. Let's talk about MLS. Minnesota United have the worst defense in MLS history. That is not even a hot take. That is probably just the truth. We will start there. They lost again 5-2 to the Revs. And at this point, after giving up 18 goals in 4 games, after giving up more goals to the first 6 games of a season than anyone else before them, after playing just 4 games, after giving up the most goals in a 4-game stretch ever, this, I think you can say, is the worst defense in MLS history. Ben, you went and looked at some more numbers. If you're a Minnesota United fan, if you're a loon, walk away. Plug your ears, or maybe just listen to it if you really like pain.
So Andy Edwards pulled this stat. Shout out to Andy Edwards. The most goals ever conceded by an MLS team in a 34-game season is 67. Minnesota are already 27% on the way there.
In four games. And that was Chivas USA in
2013.
On death march.
The most goals ever conceded through the first 4 games of the season was 11. That was 6 different teams did that. But Minnesota are at 18. So
5 goals, 6 goals, 2 goals, 5 goals given up. It's painful.
Yeah, so the 18 goals.
What do you think the Rapids are thinking right now?
Speaking of the Rapids, the 18 goals, most ever through four games, in a four-game span.
Yeah.
Previous was 17 goals by your 2008 Colorado Rapids legends. They've conceded 15 big chances, 13 of which were scored. The next highest is the Red Bulls, who also played four games, and Houston and Montreal have given up 8 big chances.
They've given up 15 big chances, 13 of which have scored.
Yeah,
big
so
what's like expected goals?
So usually big chances, like you only convert about 55-60% of the time. So the fact that their opponents have been converting them at a very high rate is kind of out of the ordinary.
Is that kind of on the lucky side, or like, hey, they're overperforming? Or are we saying that's just the quality?
Well, a few of them, I would say like a lot of them are penalties, obviously. So that's a huge factor in that they're not just regular shots. You know, some of them are definitely, I think they're a little bit unlucky. But, you know, if you watch the games, you're not really thinking that. You're really thinking, why is Lee Wynn running for 50 yards in the middle of in midfield with going completely undefended?
Right. Look, I mean, they got two goals back here. Colin Warner had a little of a worm burner off of a deflection off of like two Rebs players. So, you know, the through ball came from a Reb.
Hashtag Bear Vision if you want to see some cool stuff on that one.
For sure. And then they got a goal laid on from Brent Coleman, the NASL defender, who had a nice little touch there in the box. But look, the Rebs are going to be happy about this result. They scored 5 goals. They won at home. They needed that. Juan Agudelo got rolling once again, which we were waiting for. He's playing up top with Kai Kamara, not in the top of the diamond. That's good. How much can they really take away from that, though, Dave? I mean,
not much. You can take confidence, because you should take confidence, but you're going to play Portland on the road next week. That's the game where you have to prove to people that you're actually better than you looked like in the first few games. Scoring 5 against a team that's given up 6 and 5 already isn't really what you need to do. And as well, they're not a team that really gets hit by internationals that hard.
Yeah.
They don't really have a lot of guys.
That's why they played this weekend.
And Minnesota isn't the reason, but they got hit.
Right.
Calvo, Molino,
Schuler, Venegas, Justin Davis was suspended, obviously, for that lunge. Still going to say that's a red card till the end of time, Minnesota United fans. Adrian Heath basically came out afterwards and said, we got to take a really, really hard look in the mirror. He challenged his players, as he should. At this stage of the season, it has been tough going for Minnesota United.
We saw last year Chicago came out early in the season and Veljko Paunovic wants like play creatively, and they were just giving up goals, and he completely shut it down and went like 7 back, defended with every single player. You slow that down, and then you start to try and build the attack. I think that's what this team has to do. I mean, he's starting Mo Saeed and Colin Warner, but then he's trying to put them in advanced positions. Just drop everyone deep. Just create a line of 7.
They just get pulled out of position so easily because people are chasing the ball. Then, you know, it forces Warner and Saeed or any other center midfielders to be pushed up. And then one little pass behind and you have guys running free at the back line. And these guys have shown, you know, Vadim Demidov.
Yeah. I was waiting until
who? Yeah, okay, sorry. So we'll get into him in a second. But you have Coleman, those guys are not great on the turn. As soon as they see somebody coming at them, it's they're dead meat. Like that's not gonna work. They need to be able to pack the middle and force the opposition to out to the flanks and then make them cross. You can't just let them get the ball and you know, in front of the back line with nobody in front of them. You can't do that. It's incredible.
Look, I laughed because dead meat seemed at the time a little bit harsh, but I'm not actually sure it's that harsh.
He just loses it and he steps in when he shouldn't and he gets caught, and they have all been blatant penalties that he's given up. It's not even like, shoulder to shoulder. It's like foot out in the box.
Yeah. Vadim Demidov probably can't play defense for them anymore. Minnesota United struggling, a big win for the Rebs, a big win for Crew SC, who had Portland come to town, a rematch of that 2015 MLS Cup game, of course, that the Timbers won, celebrated on the town that night, a painful night for Crew SC and their fans, but a 3-2 win here. Nico Hansen got the game-winning goal, Justin Miriam with the goal in this one, Ola Kamara with what David calls a wonder goal, but I call Jake Gleason having adventures
the beautiful game.
No, I just, what's he doing? Why is he running out of his box like that when you're going into the corner and
He was too tentative. I wouldn't put that goal 100% on him. He either has to come all the way out or he has to stay in, obviously. He can't do halfway.
But a
big part of that goal is obviously Ola Kamara just completely blowing by both of the Timbers center backs, completely just by yards. Not even close.
You but have also, to, most people loft that shot, and one of the center backs would have recovered and knocked it out, or it would have gone over. Ola Kamara hits it perfectly on full speed.
If Ola Kamara had not had deep conversations about
Stop.
Foreign politics with you and novels in preseason, would you
yes.
still think this was a great
yeah.
goal? Look, okay, it's fine. It was a great finish. Fernando Adi does what he does in this game, gets a couple goals. Diego Valeri hits
a
the
goal.
Post. A goal, but, you know, he has a ton of chances. But look, the Timbers without Guzman, no Nagby, no Ridgewell, he was hurt in this match, so I don't think they'll feel too bad. Their three games, three win streak is over, but all good for them. Pipa Higuain, is he back? Are we done talking about the Pipa Higuain era being over?
I'm not.
So. I'm not done. I mean, this was his best game he's had in a, I would probably say a year. He had like I think he had six chances created. He was very very good in this game. I don't think one game is a big enough sample size considering his last 30 games he's had basically no games like this. So I think you know, Berhalter tried some stuff last week. He tried the 3-5-2 last week. I think we could do a 3-4-2-1 whatever
right.
to give Miram more of an opportunity to play make. And I think he's been one of the best playmakers in the league this year. And I don't understand why he keeps subbing Miram out
right
in the 60th minute.
He has always done that.
I don't know why he's doing that because I think I still prefer Miram in that position
yeah.
going forward. I mean, I don't think we're going to see I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon. It's what I'd like to see. I think Higuain's still here to stay, but you know, I wouldn't say he's going to be a best 11 player after this game.
And you bring a guy in Nico Hansen who can play on the wing if you were to push Miram center. He gets the goal to win the game for you. He's a guy who they drafted highly that they really like. So you actually have other options out there. So Higuain, like, he's capable of this every once in a while. He's not capable of
yeah.
it consistently anymore.
Just don't bet on it.
Well, that's the problem is he does this, and then, you know, for the next 2 weeks, it's, well, we know he's capable
right.
of
double
it.
Double down on that concept.
Then
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know if it's better. One thing I want to tip my hat to is both these coaches for just trying to go out and play open and win because they both have some issues on the back line right now, but, like, this is what you want to see in MLS is coaches that want to attack to win games.
Well, one thing on that, first half, I would say 100% that's true. I said second half, they both kind of saw what was going on in the game and played more conservative.
Yep, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. By the way, if we have different guys that you know you have to drink for, the ETR drinking game for Matt Doyle, I'm going to file Justin Miram, Ola Kamara, and Dairon Asprilla under the David Goss.
That's fine.
Take a sip there. Dairon Asprilla with a very nice goal.
I'll take credit
one.
For good players that play in MLS.
Yeah, you've been on that hype train from the start. Take a sip there for Dave Goss on that one. A 0-0 draw between the Red Bulls and RSL at Red Bull Arena. We have a bunch of Z's written next to this one. It was not actually that boring. No Kyle Beckerman here, no Nick Romando, no Albert Rusnak. But Tyler Adams got his second ever MLS start. And that's the big news here. If you are a fan of Bear Vision, as many are, then you would have seen the Tyler Adams highlight reel. And what I was struck by in that reel was Adams' distribution from those deep-lying spots. He's not afraid to hit a long ball, to hit a long diagonal, and he's pretty accurate with them. And he covers a stupid amount of ground. For him to get back and block that ball on the goal line in this game, that's the play that saves a loss for the Red Bulls, and it's a huge result ultimately for them on an international break. Tyler Adams, a lot of people are saying, maybe the best prospect outside Christian Pulisic in the U.S. youth. I guess Pulisic no longer is in the youth side, but he's a teenager. It's exciting to see him get another start.
I agree. I mean, we've been talking about him for 2 years, had the chance to see him in his debuts with Red Bulls too. He's a freak athlete, and Dax McCarty basically came on and gave you the rundown on him, and it's all true. He loves the game. He's a student of the game. He's a really good young player, so the veteran players like to work with him, but his athletic ability is off the charts. And there's a reason that he was stuck at fullback because he can cover that much ground up and down the wing. And then once people saw his ability to see the game, his ability to dictate, he reads very well, even though he doesn't have to because he can get there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he's an impressive player. If they are at full strength, I'd like to see him get a shot at right back just to get him on the field. If Sal Zizzo's struggling at times, and, of course, you have Murillo, who we're going to talk about in the Panama game.
C. Lade came back this week.
Right. Connor Lade came back, but he's a guy you think is going to see some Red Bull 2 time to try and get back. I'd like to see just find ways to get him on the field.
Yeah.
Young players, you always see, they start on the wing, and then eventually they end up being a center mid, like Schweinsteiger was,
mm-hmm.
like Cesc Fabregas was, players like that.
Just give him a reference point, so to speak, in the first team. A good one for him, 90 minutes here against RSL. Let's talk about that game. We've wasted some time here, you know, waxing poetic about Dairon Asprilla, but come on, 6-0 Honduras, the stakes were high. We talked about them ad nauseum in the show leading up to it. If they didn't win this game, it was going to be a very, very big deal. And Bruce Arena and the guys went out and absolutely smoked Los Catrachos. And I said it wrong again. Catrachos. My bad.
Just say Honduras.
I know, Honduras.
Just say Honduras.
I just like Catrachos. It's a good one there.
Ben, you don't know what it's like to just be cool.
Oh, sorry. I definitely don't know that.
You're out of the starting lineup, Ben. It's over for you. You're out of the starting lineup. Six goals, Clint Dempsey with a 54-minute hat trick, Christian Pulisic pulling strings, scoring a goal himself. I mean, this was...
I think it was the fastest World Cup qualifying goal since 2005, the first one.
Yeah, I mean,
it was a good way to start.
Yeah. It was, by the way, we didn't say this off the top, but the curse might be real because Sebastian
Lletget scores
and then very quickly afterwards has an ankle injury that gets him pulled out of the game after he's playing very well. It's not going to be serious,
though. Well, his goals per minute is phenomenal, and that's what he was going for.
Okay, so that's what ETR is going for? All right,
top
forever. We'll count the curse out. Clint Dempsey didn't even think he would play in this game maybe a month ago, even 2 weeks ago.
How about last week?
Yeah, and he's the starter. He comes out and bangs in three really impressive goals. I mean, the free kick, I got to put that one. It's part him, part the Panamanian, or excuse me, the Honduran goalkeeper. I think he's submitted himself, and Doug McIntyre made a very compelling argument for this in a column afterwards as the best American player of all time. If you're looking at the stats here, he's number one in World Cup qualifying goals. He just passed Josie with this hat trick. 0.42 goals per game is the best in U.S. history. Landon had 0.36. He's also two goals away from tying Landon for 57 goals. That's the all-time best for the national team. He did that in 26 fewer games. Also, just six penalties for Clint versus 15 for LD. I mean, his lone blight is that he has not scored against Mexico, and of course they go to Azteca on June 11th and don't count Deuce out.
There's also some conspiracy theories going along with that.
He could have scored the PK,
but you know, some people think he missed on purpose to keep it dose of zero.
Yes, the conspiracy theorists. I mean, is he now the greatest? I mean, does he pass LD? Has he done that in your heart, in your minds?
I actually had somebody hitting me up all weekend about this, just crumbing at me with Dempsey's better than LD. I'm still LD right now. I would say, you know, if Dempsey has a great World Cup in Russia, if the U.S. make it, I would say then I would start thinking about it a little bit more. I think one stat you missed is LD, 58 assists, Dempsey, 17. So, you know, I think Donovan was a more complete attacking player with the U.S. Dempsey scored a lot of goals. He's creative. He does stuff.
It goes to the goal scoring numbers is that he's done, you know, scored more in less games because he's played higher. And that goes to what you're saying.
His job is to be the point of the spear, so to speak.
He's played forward for a lot of time when Landon was a outside midfielder or winger, whatever we're going to call it, and whatever time it was. What's interesting about them is Landon did so much in the teenage years and early 20s, and Deuce is doing so much in the late 30s that Landon didn't because Landon retired early. If he hadn't done that, Landon obviously would be putting up numbers. Although, I guess with Jurgen, you never know.
Right, and who knows? Landon could have done something at 2014 World Cup.
Right.
He just wasn't there. On the flip side, Dempsey, a stat that we didn't say. I'm not going to say you missed it, Ben, but Dempsey's the only U.S. player to score in three World Cups. So
Dempsey has also that Europa League run with Fulham, which was a huge run, beating Juve, that goal. Those moments that Landon doesn't exactly have. He has the Everton time. He has the LA Galaxy, of course.
He has, greatest player in MLS history.
Right.
How about that?
He definitely has that, but that's because Clint hasn't played as much of his career there. So it's back and forth. Obviously, I think heart-wise goes Landon, but he did a lot of things that an American player had never done before. I'm not saying it made it easier for Dempsey to do it, but when you think about in those roles of, you know, this is an arbitrary debate, so there's no rules.
No.
Some of that goes into it. I mean, what Landon did in 2002 as a young player that Americans hadn't really done before.
And also set the U.S. national team on a course from a place of kind of a low in 98, not kind of a low, 100% a low, and then to have that high in 2002, that really drove things on, and he was the driver of this program for a long time.
One point that person was making towards me is...
Who's that person? Do they rhyme with Schmolge?
No, they're no, nobody you guys know.
Folge,
nobody you guys know.
Sent to his
is how big of a blight on Donovan's record is 06?
Yeah. Which is funny because at the same time, and Bruce, this is for you, Clint didn't get playing time in 06 when he probably deserved it, and then he finally scored the goal. So some of this Clinton do it in the early of his career may have been not his.
Yeah, look, there's a lot to unpack here. I think this is a prime opportunity to go back in and say, hey, we have a hot take hotline now, and you should call it and let us know what you think. 401-2060-MLS. Clint Dempsey or Landon Donovan, best U.S. player of all time. What do you think?
We skipped over it a little bit, but the U.S. was really good against Honduras.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. Well, also Honduras was really bad. But wow, yes. Christian Pulisic as well.
We got emails from people who were like, it was fun to watch them. I mean, we don't know what was going on in camp. You can't assume things from watching people on TV. But the amount of fans that felt, the effort, the drive, the fun, you can't take that away. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's for the fans. That's what they're saying about themselves.
But that's still the aura that surrounds the program. Mm-hmm. This is not just about players on the field.
Like, right.
It's a bigger picture. And you're right. We've been waiting for this for a while, I think. Both media, I would argue that the players would as well, and fans, supporters, everybody, to kind of have a spark, a feeling like positivity that things were going forward and that they were going to get better and that there was kind of a unity maybe in this team and in the direction that they were going. And I know it's one game, but Bruce has – we hoped that he would inject something like this, and it seems like he has.
I would say I haven't seen that kind of confidence from a U.S. team probably since – before the 2014 World Cup. I just think you could see that they knew what they were doing. They were completely focused. You know, you had Nagby out there. He's completing all the passes like he always does. Everyone knew. It seemed like everyone knew what they were supposed to be doing. No one was like, there was no discussion going on in between the players, which we have seen over the past 3 years. We've seen Michael Bradley talking to all the players like, you should be here, you should be here. We didn't see any of that in this game. We saw everyone knew their roles. Everyone was confident that they could accomplish them. It's just something we haven't seen.
In kind of a new formation, too, in the diamond, which I don't think anybody truly expected. It was a little bit of a shock when it came out that that was going to be what the formation was. And not just that, but Christian Pulisic at the point.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, Jürgen Klinsmann played him at the number 10 against Mexico. But he had players around him in this game. Of course, actually, not the same level of opponent. Players around him who were more comfortable and confident. And players around him who could do some of the things a central midfielder has to do. Originally in Legette, then in Bedoya, and in Nagby, which it wasn't the full responsibility on him. And he could still float. So rather than playing on the wing and giving him license, you play him at the number 10. I also really liked how Dempsey and Josie were dropping deep to play alongside him a lot.
Yeah.
It made it a lot easier on him as
well. I mean, it didn't really look like a diamond most of the game, to be honest. It looked more, you know, somebody I said this on Twitter, 4-1-4-1. It was more free-flowing. You know, they're obviously attacking more than they were defending. I think, you know, when it looks like a diamond, it looks like a diamond more when you're defending than as opposed to going forward. You know, Legette and Nagby and Bedoya were getting out to the wings a little bit more than you would expect out of a diamond formation. It was very attacking. I'm interested to see what if he's going to pull out the same formation against the Panama team. You know, that's okay. You know, just we'll see what's going forward. I think this game on Tuesday is almost. I'm very interested to see how they perform, and you know, I don't think we can take like a gigantic, big takeaway. U.S. is back. You know.
Right.
I need to see this game
We decide. Look, the U.S. now, we didn't mention this, but of course the hex standings, they're awfully important at this stage. U.S. with 3 points. They were on zero coming to this. That's why they need to get that win. They also fixed their goal differential. It had been -5. It's now up to plus one. 3 points there in fourth place. Panama have 4, just one ahead there in third. Then Mexico tops 7, Costa Rica with 6. Mexico with a 2-0 win against Costa Rica, and Trinidad and Tobago with a 1-0 win against Panama, and other results around the hex. Before we get out of here, we haven't really praised Jozy Altidore. I think we need to do that because I felt like his passing in particular was kind of the fulcrum around which a lot of this was built. The first goal in particular, he feeds Pulisic to bring it in. His hold-up play, his passing, let's not leave that behind because that's so important to unlocking these other guys around him and making it 6-0. Let us know what you think. Hit us up on the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0-MLS, or email or tweet at us. You know how to get us. We come back, David Sakata with your preview of Panama.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Le digo hola y ya me dice goodbye. Le digo nena como tú ya no hay. Dice que tiene novio pero yo no le creo. Y es que se complica cada vez que la veo. Suena la música y lo que yo quiero.
Back now at Extra Time Radio. Andrew Weeby, David Goss. been the Research Bear, hanging out in the green room talking U.S. men's national team. A massive game. Once again, they're all massive in the Hex. Tuesday against Panama, Estadio Romo Fernandez down in Panama City, 10 p.m. Eastern. You can watch this one on BN Sports. Of course, all the coverage, MLSsoccer.com. Make sure you go download that MLS app because we have, I believe, just about everything you could possibly want in there when it comes to coverage of these games. Real quickly, before we get to David Sakata, the football director of Diario Pro in Panama, he's going to give us that inside look at Los Canaleros. Here's a quote from Bruce Arena today when asked whether the U.S. national team is having more fun now. Quote, "We're bringing a clown in for lunch today. We're making balloons for the players." If you were going to make a U.S. men's national team player a balloon animal, Ben, what kind of animal would you make?
What kind of question? Obviously a bear. But so the only thing I can think of when I see that quote is the Goodfellas scene. So
yeah, Bruce is the best.
I mean, I didn't Bruce saying it, so it's very easy to put him into that kind
Bruce
of context.
Bruce was definitely sarcastic there, though. You know, who knows with him sometimes. We're going to get to David Sakata in just a second, but this game is interesting, and I find it funny because I was on Twitter this morning, and I saw the cover of a Panamanian newspaper, a picture of Graham Zusi training. And the headline is Regresó la Fantasma, which is The Ghost Returns. Graham Zusi, of course, the ghost that kept Panama out of that World Cup playoff back in 2013. October 2013, I was there, and it was the craziest soccer experience that I have ever had, bar none. It was a roller coaster of about 20,000 Panamanians in, out, in, out, in, out. Disbelief at the end as to why anyone would help Mexico out, let alone the United States, and score a goal in stoppage time, and then score another goal in stoppage time to take them from a 2-1 win to a 3-2 loss. I mean, I could feel their minds being blown at that very moment. I'll never forget it.
So since it's happened, I've never fully understood the extent to which Panama fans and other fans around the world have not understood how the U.S. kept playing and scored. And talking to Eduardo last week and him saying, like, well, we don't hate the U.S. Like, we hate Mexico.
Right.
There's like kind of, it seems like a consensus, like if you can screw Mexico over, why would you keep trying to score against us when Graham Zusi was trying
to get us? We're the little guys. Like, why are you going out and scoring these goals? You're going to make it, U.S. Right. You're good to go.
And Graham Zusi was trying to get a spot on the World Cup, which he ended up doing. Yep. And he ended up starting
Brad Davis, by the way, delivering that cross to Zusi. Yep. Also
Aaron Johansson with the first goal. He got a spot on the World Cup roster.
Yeah. So it just was funny when we talked to Eduardo. It was like, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see here. Not an opportunity to stick it to Mexico, but definitely a big game for both Panama and the United States. David Sakata is going to give us the inside scoop here at David Sakata, S-A-K-A-T-A on Twitter. He's the football director of Diario Pro in Panama. David, what's up, man?
Everything's great. Thank you for having me. Pretty much excited about these upcoming games. A little bit, disappointed from what happened over at Port of Spain, but looking forward to everything that will happen on Tuesday here at Romel Fernandez.
Yeah, I'm just pumped to be on the line with two Davids. It's like two on one right now. That's that good ETR stuff, man. Speaking of Estadio Romo Fernandez, I was there, actually, in 2013 when San Zusi, as the Mexicans would call him, or maybe La Fantasma, as the Panamanians would call him, scored that goal that threw the Hex up into disarray. I saw some newspaper covers heralding his return. I mean, how big of a story is this, and what do you remember about that day and kind of that event in Panamanian soccer history?
I'll start with what I remember. That day, I was working the sidelines for a national TV broadcast for that game, and I just remember looking up at the scoreboard and realizing for one instant that after all we've been through, this was actually possible. We might actually make it into the into a playoff, but at least very, very close to the World Cup. And my colleague next to me, with whom I've traveled and done all these international covers from the national team, Edgardo Vidal, he tells me, you know what, I've been here before, and I really just don't want to get my hopes high too quick, because I'd just rather wait until, you know, the whistle is blown. And that's always, you know, I've always gone back to that moment when I see the scoreboard in my mind. I see the clock at 88 minutes, and his phrase. I always go back to that because that made me, talking very personally here, made me grow as a professional, because you know, you get excited. You know, never been to the World Cup, and I was on that borderline between, you know, doing my job and being a fan of my team, of my country, you know, achieving something very important. And I remember that last play where Tejada drives the ball up near the goal, the U.S. goal, and he has Gaby Torres on the next on the opposite side. And instead of looking for Gaby Torres, he tries to dribble past two defenders. We lose the ball. Roberto Chen is up in the midfield. Jairo Jimenez is running up as well. You know, we're very weak on the defense at this instant, and then that goal comes in. Graham Souza becomes the savior of Mexican soccer for the next couple of years, in a couple of months. And I was struck. And then that second goal, Aaron Johansson, and, you know, it was borderline, you know, getting my emotions up and being showing them and you know, having, again, my colleague tell me, hey, we're here to do our job, and our job is to let the people know what's going on. And then, you know, Danny Valdez didn't want to talk after that. And then Jurgen Klinsmann telling us how this is how you play. You play to win regardless of the circumstances. You know, that German mentality, you know, we repeated that way too much. And then, you know, Graham Susi's back. USA is back. We're back in the hex. Fortunately, this is not a moment where we're deciding things, but it's every game here is a deciding point. So him being called the Fantasma, the ghost of the past, heck, I think it's appropriate. I like the wordplay. I don't think the revenge feeling is there still in the players. They do know it's important, not because of what happened, but because if we want to make it to the World Cup, you can't lose points at home. You can tie Mexico at Roman Fernandez, and you can tie as well with the U.S. here at home. I mean, you—that's probably the good scenario with while trying to get to the World Cup. But given the circumstances, having lost in Trinidad and Tobago, you need those points back, and the only way to get them back is beating U.S. at Roman Fernandez on Tuesday.
You mentioned that result in Trinidad, 1-0, not what Panama was looking for. Kevin Molino, hot boy, with the goal in this one. How realistic are those World Cup hopes, in your opinion? Is this team right now, is this group better than the one in 2013 that got so close? Where does kind of Panamanian soccer stand at this point?
I'll say it's, you know, we have a lot of players from that day back in the team, which obviously makes them older in the, let's say, in the maturity sense. But they're also older physically, so you won't see the great plays out of players like Baloy or even Blas Perez, which will not be playing tomorrow as a starter. But there's this level of balance between the guys who've been there through thick and thin with the national team, and then this new blood who's had it somehow easier, you know, to be able to play outside, to be able to experience soccer as a professional in different leagues, mostly MLS nowadays. So I think there's a great balance, and that maturity, that experience they've had outside of the country gives us a probably a better team than what we had that day, because or that year, because all of those players grew up, you know, if I can say it somehow, after that U.S. game. You know, it took time, it took games, it took, you know, turning pages and focusing on the next in order to get over that awful day. But they're better now because of that. Because of that happened, these players know how to get over things quicker. And now and that is the Trinidad game, which had a result none of us expected. I mean, we could tie them, we could come back to the game, we could beat them, but losing like that was it hurt somehow. It hurt the coach. He was disappointed. He didn't want to talk to us after the game. Well, he doesn't know what it's like to talk to us after games, but he was particularly upset by the way things developed and that play, having Roman outside of the game to tie his shoe and then coming back with the game against us. It was surreal at one point, but I think the players now have the mentality to turn the page and focus on the next feat, which is beating U.S. at home.
What is the feel around the country about this national team? What's the pressure on these players right now? Because we know that it hasn't always been the number one sport in Panama.
pressure is high, and pressure, and it gets intense because of that Trinidad game, and it gets like that because after we beat Honduras, the only time Mexico here, we're 4 points into the qualifier, and everyone's dreaming about Russia. Everyone's thinking about plane tickets, or when's the best time to buy them, and who's going to be able to be a starter on that first game at the World Cup. And then all of a sudden you lose to a team that has a new coach that you were supposed to beat, and then everything is just thrown out, and these players are not up to the task, and we're not going to make it, and why do this to us again? Why are we supposed to believe in this team when we're only repeating results from the past? So here we go as high as already being in the first game of the World Cup, and who could be a starter to being right now a team that has no chance of making it to a World Cup, which is totally false, because we're sitting in qualifying position. A good result tomorrow assures us to be in that position. Looking forward to those June games, and that's the way the Hex is. I mean, this is our third Hex in our history, our second or our first time we go back to back qualifying to Hexes. So that also makes us have to grow as media, as fans, obviously as players as well. I've already mentioned that, but the media and the fans, we have to grow as well. We have to mature. We have to realize that the way things are now, we want to be, you know, rubbing shoulders with the big boys, rubbing elbows with the big boys. We have to, you know, have that mentality as well. So there is pressure. Because after losing those, at least one point in Trinidad, you need those points back. And you need to get them by beating the U.S. You cannot wait until you get them now.
You have to either win or get that draw. As you said, at home, it's very important. Right now, Panama in third position in the Hex on 4 points. The U.S. right behind them with three. That big win against Honduras has the Americans flying. How do you get the result? What do Panama need to do? What will they do on Tuesday, David, to go about doing this thing?
Well, Bolillo has already said that he'll start two attackers, two players with experience and with the drive and the hunger and with the knowledge and as we say it here, with those with the goal between their eyes. Luis Tejada will be a starter. Gabriel Torres, former Colorado Rapids man, will be a starter. Both of them will create the offensive play Panama needs. Now we go back to that Honduras game where U.S. Just rolls on top of this Pinto team with a 6-0 win, a great show by Pulisic, and you have to worry about who's going to work that midfield. We're going to be working with probably, you know, defensive type of midfielders. We have Godoy, who probably won't be as free as he is in San Jose, because he has to be destroying midfield plays from the U.S. You have Gabriel Gomez, who will be back after serving one game suspension against Trinidad, and you probably have Amilcar Enriquez from Aragonido, who all of them have a very defensive type of play when it's needed. Mostly Gomez and Amilcar Enriquez. So this is where it is. We'll probably be working those the sides with Quintero and Cooper. They'll probably be doing that work, and we'll go back to our four defenders. Probably the same thing you saw in the Trinidad. They'll be there. That it seems to be those will be the players who will work the starting 11 tomorrow. But mostly here is, you know, risk it. This is something that we didn't see in Trinidad. You have to risk those shots. You have to take those shots. When we were close to the goal, Trinidad goal, you could see players, you know, just playing to the side, looking for that long ball in, and having Arroyo head that into the goal. That didn't happen. You have to change that gameplay. You need to look for the long distance shot. You have to look for the quick play inside the box. This is what I'm expecting tomorrow from Panama with the type of players what are you setting up in offense.
One of the players who you said should be starting, Roman Torres, won an MLS Cup last season with Seattle. What's the image of that accomplishment in the country and the Major League Soccer in general?
It's definitely the comeback of the year, what Roman Torres did. I don't know if the word is correct. I was present the day he got injured at the Avaya Stadium when they were playing in San Jose. I was able to talk to him after that because Godoy was facing Roman for the first time in the MLS. I made the trip. And, you know, I was there. I could feel his disappointment at the moment when he was diagnosed with the injury. He was not exactly sure that it would take so long. He's a strong guy. And he showed us how strong he is by coming back, being very intelligent with his recovery, not forcing it in order to be in the Copa America Centenario. He waited his time. He did his work, worked in Seattle, worked in Panama, worked in Colombia, and now he's back stronger than ever, comes back home with the title of MLS champion, if I'm not mistaken, first Panamanian ever to do so. And he brings us that trust, knowing that we have probably the best defender in the area. We have that. He plays with us. And he's a very charismatic guy. He's a very marketable guy. People really like him. And he's not only that, but when it's time to suit up, he's an authentic leader on the field and outside of it, a role model for everyone who loves the sports here in Panama, so you have in him the person with the capacity to lead this team into the objectives. He knows players who will be in this team. Most of them, or those who are in the MLS, he's faced them. His team is with them. So he'll have this insight, this knowledge of the U.S. team that will allow him to gain even more confidence with his teammates when it comes to face the rival tomorrow.
Give me a little bit of an insight here as far as young talent in Panama, David. I mean, this is a question we always wonder when we look at Central America. We know MLS teams need to be scouting down there, need to be finding the next Aníbal Godoy, the next Roman Torres. Who is the guy on this team, or maybe in the domestic league, a young, exciting player who you look at and say, he has a future outside of this country, he has a future maybe in MLS, and teams should be scouting him?
Definitely. There are a couple of names here, and fortunately, some of the names I can mention have already taken a step outside of Panama. Some of them are in the MLS already, even though they haven't played. I'm talking about Miguel Camargo, who's in NYCFC. I'm talking about Michael Amir Murillo, who's already in the Red Bulls. Both of these players haven't played yet, but they're already in MLS, the MLS structure. For me, the player that would definitely be on this list has to be Edgar Bárcenas, who is playing second division in Mexico with Cafetaleros. He had a breakout season or tournament with Araunido last semester, that awesome game in Monterrey, where he was a star player. He's already playing outside of the country. Most of us would like to have him, and I include myself into that. I'd like to have him in a first division of any country, playing second division. I don't mean no disrespect to that league in Mexico, but, you want to see your players being in the top leagues of every country. So I would say Edgar Bárcenas, I have no doubt I also will see him in MLS in the near future, because he has the talent and he has the capacity to be in that sort of league. Maybe into Mexico second division, or he has two or four goals, has four games, if I'm not mistaken, being a starter for the national team while being in Araunido. So this is definitely one of the stars of the future for our national team right now.
Definitely want to keep your eye on there. Before we let you go, David, we got to ask you, man, prediction time. What are you thinking here? Do Los Canareros get the result they need? Do they get a draw? Do they get a win? Maybe even.
I'm gonna go with the importance of the game and the need for the win. Whatever happened in Trinidad, it has to stay there. Fix those mistakes. Roman Torres promised he'll score the winning goal in Trinidad. Also, he was off by a game, and he'll be the scorer for this game against the U.S. One of his miraculous headers that we've seen him already do against Mexico in Gold Cup. I have a feeling those will be back tomorrow. And I'll see Gabby Torres up in the scoreboard as well. Let's say it's a 2-1 for Panama.
Oh, man, 2-1. That was the same prediction, I think, right? Yeah. All right, we had a
guest on from
Eduardo
Honduras.
Solano. He said 2-1.
And then the U.S. won 6-0.
Does that give you any pause?
I'm sorry?
Does that make you nervous at all that you replicated his 2-1 guess there and it was a 6-0 on the other side?
Well, no, I'm not. It doesn't make me nervous. I had a conversation earlier with a colleague. We were doing the radio show, and she tells me, this is the first time I have a feeling things are not going to work our way. I said, it's okay. You have the Trinidad feeling. Get it off. You always have to go in every single game thinking the result is going to come. I mean, it's not our job as media to score the goals, but I like to come into the games with a positive mentality. I remember this anecdote once we were playing Honduras, and one local colleague here in the newspaper, he said he had an article in an Honduras newspaper. He said, I think we're losing. Honduras is a better team than we are. Then when the game was over, Coach Eddie Valdez singled him out, which is, we was totally out of line, but he singled him out saying, hey, you always have to trust your team, and we always do our job. We don't come here trying to lose games. So this is what I'm thinking. Guys need to get over that Trinidad loss. Maybe some of them have that 2013 feeling. It's a good day. It's a good day to get those feelings off and get back to that World Cup qualifying mentality.
A massive hexagonal match between Panama and the United States. Estadio Romo Fernandez, 10 p.m. Eastern, BN Sports here in the U.S. You can watch it on Tuesday. You can also follow David at David Sakata, S-A-K-A-T-A. He's the football director of Diario Pro in Panama. David, thank you so much for your time, man.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure being here, and I'm glad to be back anytime soon.
Oh, man. 2-1 prediction. That did not work out very well for Eduardo Solano. Is there any way Panama beats the U.S. here? Do we
100%.
100%.
Okay. I just asked the question. God,
is there any way Panama beats the U.S.? Yeah.
I think it's more likely that they win or tie than
really?
The U.S. wins.
Really?
Yeah. They beat Honduras 6-0. That's great.
I mean, I'm not even taking on the 6-0. I'm just saying straight talent levels. Like,
yeah, it's CONCACAF qualifying. You don't go on the road
on the
and
road.
Get wins. You know, Rico Clark gets a crazy shot, and you get a draw at Trinidad and Tobago, and
Brad
that's
Evans
a good result.
Is in Jamaica.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
This is not easy, on top of which I think this is a Panamanian team that has a lot of defensive talent, both in midfield and Anibal Godoy, Armando Cooper, as well as, of course, that back line, Roman Torres, Felipe Godoy.
I mean, they're clearly coming down. They're on a decline from, a golden generation. But, you know, they still have a lot of veteran players who know how to get results.
Six MLSers in this one, on the back line especially. Machado down in Houston, Roman Torres, of course. Felipe Beloy is not an MLSer, but I've dreamt about him being an MLS a lot.
Yeah.
I've always thought he would be a great player for this league. Never did make it here. Amir Murillo, he's a New York Red Bull. He has not played yet. You heard David mention that one as well. And then Godoy, Armando Cooper, Miguel Camargo, probably Cooper and Godoy in the starting lineup.
Who's
going to score goals for them? I mean, he's talking about
Gabby Torres and Tejada. I mean, Tejada's been doing it for 15 years. The guy knows how to score goals.
I think
if it was Blas
Tejada
Perez,
celebrated for like 15 minutes after the goal he scored in that game in 2013. The whole stadium stopped.
Gotta,
it was insane.
You got to know how to have style. But if it was Blas Perez, you'd be like, oh, Blas Perez is going to score goals.
100%.
Tejada's just as experienced as Perez. He's been around this block a couple times. And, you know, he said Roman Torres, I think, for a reason. I think set pieces is a good chance for them to get some bodies forward. We've seen Godoy score a couple goals for San Jose opening up this MLS season. It's a tough game. I said it last time, so I feel weird saying this because then they beat Honduras 6-0.
Yeah.
But I do think it's going to be a tough game.
I think the U.S. is going to win this one. We'll see what happens. Watch it Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, BN Sports, all the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com. You can give your takes as well. Remember, hit up the Hot Take Hotline. With that, we are going to go to the mailbag. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Extra Time Radio, Andrew Wiebe, David Gospin, the Research Bear, just hanging out. Remember, you have the Hot Take Hotline that you can hit up to get at us as well, 401-2060-MLS. Do we make this like a song? Should it be like a jingle?
Maybe we should make it
Hotline,
like...
401-2060-MLS. That's not very...
No,
we need to make it a soccer chant.
Okay.
So I don't have one
right
now
for
it to go with.
Put the Hot Take Hotline, you should put your jingle in there.
Yeah,
we'll pick the best
call
one.
In. Oh, with
yeah,
the
that's
hot take.
Good, actually, that's a really good plan there. This
that's
is
why I'm here.
Ben the Research Bear is in the starting lineup for this show. We do miss the armchair analyst, but you know that is.
I
what
do
it
have
is.
To put out there that tonight is opening night for me and Ben's co-ed soccer team.
Oh, that's
although
where we're
in
talking.
We're
league.
In a league with
no co-ed league. Yeah,
yeah, except we're the only co-ed team. How many goals are you going to score, Ben? Ben's the Jack McInerney. He's a fox in the box
tonight or this season?
No, he's Connor Casey.
See,
on both. What?
How many goals are you going to score?
Tonight or this season?
You tell me. I don't care.
I'm going to score 2 tonight. I'm going to score 8 this season.
So if
I heard
come
that
on,
possibly that you were going to lose your starting spot.
Well, he needs
I
to score goals.
Yeah, I
if
don't
we
wanna.
Come on, when we come on next show, I'm going to tell everyone
okay.
the box score.
We will
for
have the update
ben
on
there,
Ben the Research
including
Bear.
Dribbles one.
Yeah, okay. Let's
Tom
let's,
in,
let's
Tom in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania says, how much are you hoping for two hat tricks in 4 games? For Clint next.
Yeah, we heard from a lot of you during this U.S. national team game, which was pretty funny. I checked the Twitter feed, and I keep seeing people say, like, hat trick for Deuce. I'm like, wait, what are they talking about? I'm like,
talking about you,
the intro. We weren't just looking at the stats. We were definitely watching the game as well. So that was a funny moment. I really enjoyed that.
And we'll get into the curse in a minute. Andres Soto is getting our shout-out of the week. He said, catching up on some recent Extra Time pods, showing some FC Dallas love in Rome last week, sent us a picture. So, Andres, you're our shout-out of the week.
Yeah, thanks, Andres, for rocking with us in Italy.
Scotty in Brandon, Mississippi said, do you guys think Atlanta's early success has affected how other teams have assessed themselves? I think he's saying if an expansion team's this good, does an RSL look at themselves differently? Does a Columbus look at themselves differently?
I think everyone has to look at themselves differently. Every time an expansion team comes in this league, the paradigm changes and it shifts. And what success is and how it's accomplished shifts because these teams have to go out and they look at what everybody else is doing, what every other expansion team has done, and say, how do we improve upon that? How do we make it better? And I think Atlanta undoubtedly is doing that right now. We've talked a lot on this show about how their willingness and their ability, because a lot of people are willing to spend money. It's your ability to attract the Miguel Almirones, the Tata Martinos of the world, to go build that training facility that really matters. It's the actual results, and they're getting those right now. If they can make the playoffs, if they can make a run, if they can be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, I think they will have changed the landscape of this league, and it just so happens that I also talked to Darren Eales about this today, and you can catch that in a column on MLSsoccer.com on Wednesday. So thank you for leading me into my own self-promotion.
His second question, how fun will it be to watch Atlanta United playing CCL matches in the near future? He finished his email with hashtag deep fried Southern hype, which I think Andrew is riding and Ben is not.
Also, he did not hashtag CCL fever. He just went hashtag CCL. So, CCL, not, you know, I'm Ben's, not as impressed by that, Ben's, but I am pumped for them to be in CCL. I'll throw that out. I'll
Ben's be not
them.
Buying
I'm pumped
it
for any team to be in CCL. So, you know, let's get there first.
James Porter on Twitter, good match by Crew FC tonight, down early goal and a fight back in a scrappy playoff type game. Here you go, Ben. Rumors of Pipa's demise seem overblown. Was carving them up with passing and pressing. Keeper to force a turnover in the 93rd minute. High energy.
While you're in this
man.
Room just talking trash, Pipa's forcing turnovers in the 93rd, Ben. How do you feel about that?
Great. It was one game.
Okay. There you go.
Savannah Rigdon sends us an email. And once again, another RSL fan who's venting a little bit for us. But the crux of it is, what are they going to do at coach? She brings up Landon Donovan, which isn't a name we've heard. We've heard him doing a lot with San Diego expansion right now. We haven't really heard him connected to this. She mentioned Ziggy Schmidt. We've talked about Robin Fraser. Mike Petke is already there. She wonders if maybe a return to the diamond is what's best for this team, although she's not sure if Rusnak fits it. Coaching-wise, though, where do we see this team going?
I was on Twitter, I'm not going to say popping off, but giving my opinion, and my opinion was that Robin Fraser would be in – you know, the best man for this job, top to bottom, because you are trying to build a culture and because it is a place where you need a little bit of institutional knowledge, I think, about the community and about the club and about what works. But every word I'm hearing is that it's probably Mike Petke, which in a lot of ways makes sense. He had a ton of success at the Red Bulls. He's a guy that can come in and establish kind of set the tone, so to speak, in that locker room, which is maybe something they've been missing. So I think right now he's the one to watch out for. But some news around RSL, not them particularly, but Luis Gil, a former RSL player, looks like he's going to come back to MLS. Our good friend Julie Stewart Binks reports that he's going to come back on loan to Orlando City, reunited with Jason Christ. Of course, they had a ton of success together at RSL in the past. So stay tuned. That's what I think will happen. Probably Petke, but it's not done.
Seems like it. It seems like it's leaning that way. Danny Girard on Twitter, whoever said that Will Bruin can be considered for breakout player of the year in his seventh season? Come on, guys.
I'm pretty sure I smoked sure somebody that for that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I was like,
yeah, you're not smart sometimes.
Oh, man.
If you break out from what you are, you're the breakout player of the year. Everyone knows that.
Whatever, bro.
Don't think so.
Chris Brandon Whitaker here, he says, once again, Jesse Marsh goes from 4-2-2. He returns to a 4-2-3-1 to try and get his team a result late in the game. We saw it in Atlanta. We've seen it basically in every game so far this season. They weren't able to get a win. They get a tie. But he's saying, why not try a 4-1-3-2 so you bring Sasha back central, but you still have a partner up top for BWP. Do you think they stick, Ben, with the 4-2-2-2 experiment that they've got going on?
I think, you know, I think Jesse gives it a couple more games before he completely scraps it. You know, we've only seen Gilbronson in a couple games so far. I think he gives go Brunson and BDP, a BWP, a chance to work together for, you know, two or three more games, see how it works out. You know, I think Go Brunson showed a lot of flashes offensively in this game. He couldn't finish. Matt Van Ockel just came up with huge saves a couple times. I think he can create these kind of quality chances. He just has to finish them. If he starts doing that, obviously they're not going to go away from the 4-2-2-2. But I think a couple more games, you know, I think clearly they still are probably more comfortable in the 4-2-3-1. But I think Jesse really wants to move towards this one.
Yeah, the question is what's coming down from the top? Because this club is in a unique position in the sense that they do have, quote-unquote, parent club and a larger organization that they fit into. And if that organization is saying, hey, we want the 4-2-2-2, it's always a guessing. How many twos did I throw into that?
I think not more than that, but along with that, and Chris said PS can't wait to hear Dave's cut, so that's why I have to is that Jesse's played really well in the regular season for 2 years and hasn't won in the playoffs. And I think for him, growing pains right now is something he can accept because he needs something different to happen in October and November.
That's a good point.
And he saw that his team could get beat on the counter in their old formation, and he needs to find a way to get the game more compact and still score goals. So that's, I think, what they're trying to figure out.
And maybe
out
this
right
is
now.
More about, like you said, just getting that club in the bag. Like, even if you walk away from it after three games and say, okay, to get the results we need, we're going to predominantly play the 4-2-3-1, fine, but we'll have this in the playoffs should we need it. Maybe that's the play. We'll see.
Canchon on Twitter, jumping on that, Tyler Adams, he either wants to know, is it a crowded train for David Goss?
That's the hype train.
Or
Woo-hoo!
Is it a drink when mentioned for Doyle? I'm taking credit for
You're
Tyler
taking
Adams.
That one? You want Tyler Adams?
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott Leach on Twitter says, enjoyed Brian Dunseth interview. Would love to hear a Frankie Hayduck story time.
The dude? I actually think that's a – not actually. I used this on Dave on Ben earlier, and he took offense when I said I actually liked Bear Vision, which I definitely like. But I definitely think that's a good idea, Scott. We'll reach out on that one.
Jorge Pereira wants to know, regular season games during an international break, how can MLS be a league of choice if they do that?
Well, you only saw three, and I think – correct me if I'm wrong, guys, here, but I think teams have some options on these. They can say, hey, we're open to playing on that weekend. And if you're a team like the New England Revolution, you didn't have any absences, why not? Why wouldn't you? So I don't think this is about being league of choice or, you know, the quality or whatever. Some teams made some decisions. They play. The schedule's a tough nut to crack. You do it any way you can.
Ben Mochan wants to know how much this result and the, it looks like, mood under Bruce shows how hard it was under Jurgen, how much of a mess it was. And he wants to know, are there more Pulisics coming?
On the mood side, I'm with Ben. Like, you know, 6-0 was really, really invigorating for just about anybody to watch because it was such a high-stakes game. But it is not it's not a given that this is going to continue. Like, every game is another test. Every game is another opportunity to prove
Thanks.
Yourself.
Thanks for your opinion, Weaves. Goss actually asked me the question.
Oh, sorry.
But, you know, he just decided to jump in.
No.
I'm not used to being in the starting lineup, man.
You know, yes.
I thought you already
answered. I think I was definitely released from, you know, the time under Klinsmann. Let's not get overblown here, you know. Let's see what happens on Tuesday. Are there more Pulisics coming? I don't know. We'll see. You know, people are talking about Andrew Carlton. I actually will be in Frisco, Texas for 10 days coming up for the Generation Adidas Cup. So anybody who lives in Dallas area, hit me up. You know, we can go grab a beer or something, talk about this. But I'm excited to see all the talent down there. Real Madrid will be down there. A bunch of Mexican teams, including Tigres, Monterrey, Chivas, all those teams will be down there. So I'm really excited to see all the talent. I'd say the big game, Tuesday night, 7:15 Eastern, FC Dallas versus Real Madrid. Every MLS fan should be watching this. It's going to be lit.
And I'm pretty sure I know the guy that's going to be on the call for that, don't
this
I?
This guy, yeah. It's going to be exciting. True? Yeah.
David Goss. Oh, by the way, Red Bulls 2 this weekend, if you want to hear some ETR flavor, since we're just going self-promotional on this
just
podcast.
Dropping now.
Dave Goss of the play-by-play, and I'm doing the color. So
one of the things that I think fans should look out for is there's a number of young players right now in Europe. You have all the guys at Schalke. You have Josh Perez getting minutes. Rubio Rubin, we've already talked to. Emerson Heinemann. If the U.S. national team can be this strong right now, I mean five deep at right back, Kellen Acosta getting time at central midfield, Pulisic, and bring one or two of those guys to a World Cup potentially if they make it, I mean that is what's really exciting.
By the way, the next Christian Pulisic, I mean he is in a international sense, not an American sense. He's a huge, huge talent. So let's not get overboard thinking there's just a conveyor belt of players like this because there's not in the U.S., there's not in – just about any country in the world.
But
this
there
is
are
unique.
Bobby Woods and Fabian Johnsons that the
for
U.S.
Sure.
is going to keep
100% agree. I'm just saying, let's acknowledge the fact that Christian Pulisic is a transcendent talent right now.
So Bruce Arena comes out. He plays the diamond. Unexpected in this one. But last week on this show, Brian Dunseth talked about his Olympic team training in the diamond. And at Ronald Gringo, a legend on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You should follow
legend
him
in life.
If you don't. RonalGringo. You should follow him. He tweets that at us. And, of course, the curse tweets come in. Joe Chung was going to say Legette avoided the curse but spoke too soon. Reddy says, I'd love to have more LA Galaxy players on Extra Time Radio, but I can't afford more injuries for the club.
Good point, to be honest. And, of course, I jumped the gun after he scored the goal and jumped on the ETR account, forced Dave to give me his phone to tweet this. The curse is over. There has been no curse. And not but
yeah,
2 minutes
we were all together, and the second I saw you do that, I knew something bad was going to happen.
That I had triggered the curse. Yeah. So maybe ETR is not the curse. Maybe I'm the curse.
I think that's probably what it is.
You know what? I'm willing to take that.
And I was with you, and some mantle. Other bad stuff happened that night, so you know.
Hey, look, Wisconsin got as far as they could. Just move on. Just move on, okay?
Oh, God, I'm not talking about college basketball with these losers. The final email.
Shout out to Kansas.
Tom Thresher, and he basically said what I said a lot of people had emailed us. He enjoyed watching them for the first time in a while. It was fun. He felt like they fought again. He felt like there was some real team camaraderie, some desire, and that it was a match that he enjoyed watching again. I think a number of fans for the U.S. jumped on that Fox Sports Go, replayed this game a couple times, and we'll see what happens in Panama.
It's one of those, it felt like a deep exhale for the whole kind of base of support. People that hadn't really felt that in a while and had felt kind of this tension around the Jurgen era, and part of that was the conversation and the narrative and where it went, and, you know, it's feeling better right now, but Tuesday could change things once again. 10 p.m. Eastern against Panama. Watch it on BN Sports. Follow it on MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app. And hit us with your hot takes. Hot take hotline is open. 401-206-0MLS. Still a work in progress there. That's it for us. We will see you on Thursday. Have a good one, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.